plate a potential nugget.
In the book, you talk about four waves in becoming an expert in a certain field, Dori. Could you talk about each of these? You talk about learning, creating, connecting, and reaping. Could you expand on these and how you've sort of thought about them at different stages?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the frameworks that I share in the long game actually comes as a result of some of the work that I've done with my own coaching clients, because people would often come to me and they would be feeling frustrated. They'd be feeling like they're in some kind of a rut, or that they were working really hard, but it didn't seem to be getting them anywhere. And what I saw time and again is if you peeled back the layers and talked to them about what they were doing, they definitely were working hard. That was true. But the problem was oftentimes they were working hard at the same thing. They were working hard at the thing that they were already good at, or the thing that they already knew how to do, or the thing that they already liked doing. And where they were falling short was transitioning into doing other things, necessary things. And so what I came to realize is that in our careers, we need to be mindful that we can't just get away with doing the same thing. We have to be aware of what wave we're in and then shift accordingly. And so the four that I identified, number one is the learning wave, because of course, when we're new at a company or we're new in a field, you have to take it all in. I mean, your whole life is, you know, reading the books or listening to the podcasts or having the meetings so that you understand, you know, who's who and how does this place work?
Right.
And you're soaking it up. But you obviously can't stay there. You have to make your own contribution at a certain point. And so you shift into creating mode. And that's where you're sharing your own ideas. And, you know, there's a million ways you could do it. It's everything from speaking up in meetings to starting to offer your own advice. You know, hey, you know, I can do a lunch and learn about XYZ. Or maybe it's mentoring other colleagues, or it's volunteering to present at a conference or whatever it is. But somehow you have to give back. You have to show people that you have ideas worth listening to. There also then needs to be the connecting phase, because your ideas, however good they are not going to be very successful, or they're not going to get a lot of traction if you're the only one that knows about them. You have to build relationships and build connections so that they can get amplified. And then finally, we get to the reaping phase, which sounds good, but that is what we were talking about earlier with Marshall Goldsmith. It is good. It's wonderful to be successful and respected and making a lot of money, but it's not good if you stay there and you stagnate and it prevents you, the kind of golden handcuffs preventing you from making your full contribution, which is why we need to cycle back at a certain point into learning mode.
I think one of the other guests was a lady called Whitney Johnson, who talks about these multiple S-curves, and she talks about the same thing. How do you really, you know, we all go through these phases in an S-curve, and then you need to know when you're tapering off and then pick the next S-curve and so on and so forth.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just to provide some additional context on Whitney Johnson, she's the author of the book Disrupt Yourself, where she's taken some of the principles of disruptive innovation, a term coined by Clay Christensen of Harvard, and she's applied that to our lives. She speaks about an example here about how a leader reinvents himself in an organization.
Okay, so let me tell a story that I think really illustrates this idea of what happens with the S-curve. So, imagine that you are a vice president. You're one of 25 at a company of 6,000 people. And that is what the top of the S curve looked like for Dan Shapiro. Dan Shapiro had joined LinkedIn in 2008. He had studied math and statistics in college. He'd then gone to business school. He went to work at Bain in consulting. And then 2008, he arrives at LinkedIn and he starts in operations. But by 2008, he's basically at the top of that S curve in operations. And I think that often happens when we start a new role, is even though ideally we would start at the low end of that S curve, we end up in the sweet spot because people don't quite know where to put us and they want us as competent as possible. Mm-hmm. But by 2010, Dan's at the top of that S curve because typically you'd expect 3 to 4 years, but it takes him 2 years. So he jumps to the bottom of a new S curve inside of LinkedIn and he moves into sales. So he's at the low end of that S curve, but by 2013, he's now at the top of that S curve in sales. When he started, they had about $10 million in revenue. Now they have $1 billion. So yes, it's a rocket ship. He had about 8 reports. Now he has 1,000 reports. And so he's at the top of this S curve, and he goes and he has this conversation with his boss's boss, the CEO, and says, "Hey, you know, look what happened. Like, let's do a victory lap. I'm at the top of the curve. I would love to be a tech CEO myself someday." And his boss says to him, "Well, if that's your dream of being a tech CEO, you're actually on the wrong curve." He didn't say that, but basically, you're in the wrong job. You can't get there from here. Tech CEOs, they build product, you're in sales. So now Dan's looking at this saying, "I'm at the top of the S curve. What do I do?" Well, a lot of people in this situation would have said, "Well, I'm going to jump to a new S curve. It's not going to be here. I've hit the top." Kind of like what I did when I left Wall Street. I jumped to a new S curve somewhere else. But Dan didn't. He comes back after about 2 months. He's deliberating, very frustrated, of course. Then he says, "Okay, let's build great products." And his boss is looking at him thinking, "What? You've got 1,000 reports. You've got a $1 billion line of business. And you want to jump from the top of that S curve to the bottom of the S curve where you've got no direct reports. You've got 4 engineers you're working with and no guarantees for the future. And based on the data, we know," and LinkedIn has a lot of data, "people don't move from product to sales." But Dan made that jump. He jumped. He jumped to the bottom of that S curve. Now, there were parts that he was terrible at because he was inexperienced. He was on the launch point of the curve, which is exactly what you want. You want people to be inexperienced because they ask questions like, "Why do you do it like this?" But there were parts he was amazing at. He had all this ability, all this experience that allowed him to contribute in a really unusual and meaningful way. 6 years later, he gets up to the top of that S curve in product, and then he jumped again to the bottom of a new curve, now is responsible for all of sales globally. So that's what it can look like. There's a risk when you do it. There was a risk for Dan. There was a risk for Dan's family because they were like, you know, he probably went home and he said, "Honey, I shrunk my role today." That had to have been a really tough conversation. There was a risk for his boss and his boss's boss. But that step back, that willingness to become a silly little thing, to move down the y-axis of success to a lower axis, became a slingshot not only for Dan, but also for LinkedIn. So that's what it can look like for you inside of an organization.
Like Dory and Whitney say, at some level, I guess life is a series of S-curves for us to ride, almost like swinging from one trapeze to another as time goes by.